Good evening, Wilmington. Thanks for joining us. This is Tom Joyner, and I've got a commentary for you. I'll get to the subject of sanctuary cities and refugees in a moment, but first, the toxic atmosphere in Washington does not bode well for the country. When the two main political parties in America value scoring points against each other more than working together to benefit the country, it cannot end well. We saw that again last Thursday when Attorney General William Barr held a press conference prior to releasing the Mueller report. While Barr has a sterling reputation in government service, it behooves Democrats to berate him and claim that he is the president's puppet. At the press conference, the Democrats' willing media corps offered questions designed to mislead the public. In his statements, Barr made it perfectly clear that there had been no collusion between any Americans, President Trump or his administration, and the Russians in the 2016 election. After more than 2 long years of the Mueller investigation, and after investigations by both the House and the Senate, Robert Mueller and his team of Trump-hating Democrats could not find any evidence of collusion involving the president or anyone connected to the president. When that was revealed, Democrats and their fake news counterparts faced a dilemma. For more than 2 years, they had insisted that there was collusion between the Trump camp and Russia. California Congressman Adam Schiff said repeatedly that there was a mountain of evidence to prove collusion between Trump and the Russians, and other Democrats had committed that lie as well. It is telling that Robert Mueller himself has not contradicted the AG's statements. Now that the Democrats' lies have been exposed, they have no mountain of evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, or even a molehill of such evidence. The American people, Republicans or Democrats, should be furious that these lies were told to them for more than 2 years and cost taxpayers more than $30 million. Pundits say that the Mueller investigation worried Donald Trump. But why should it not worry him? There was always the chance that somebody connected to the Trump campaign had done something stupid. If you were wrongly accused of treason that you knew you had not committed, would you not defend yourself forcefully? Remember, President Trump said from the beginning that he welcomed an investigation into whether or not he had been betrayed by someone in his administration. They could not find it. The Democrats and their henchmen in the fake news media are scrambling to keep the lies alive. While there has been 2 congressional investigations and a determination by Robert Mueller, Attorney General Barr, and Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosenstein that no collusion occurred, Democrats and their media allies refuse to let it go, even when they can supply no evidence to dispute the determinations. Remember, they lied to us for more than 2 years, and the fake news media fanned that foul odor. Now that Robert Mueller and his hand-picked Trump-hating Democrat contributors could not find collusion between Trump and Russia, the foaming-at-the-mouth Democrats like Nadler, Schiff, Pelosi, and Schumer want us to forget about their false collusion charges and move on to obstruction by Trump. As for in obstruction, how do you obstruct something that never happened? No crime was committed. It is true that President Trump was livid at the false accusations and that he looked desperately for a way to defend himself and get on with the people's business. A president has advisors around him for just such a purpose. Those advisors cautioned Trump not to do anything rash, such as fire Mueller, and Trump took their advice. He didn't want to, He hated to, but he took it. The Trump administration gave the Mueller investigation unprecedented cooperation. The Obama administration knew of Russia's attempts to influence the 2016 election, but they never informed Trump, the candidate, nor took any meaningful action to stop it. Obama was president at the time, and it was his duty to make Russia's attempts public and to stop it. He did not do either one, and yet after Trump won, Democrats pretend it was all Trump's fault. We have many problems in America that need attention. Things like crumbling infrastructure, health care, and thousands, if not millions, of illegal aliens marching on our border, among other concerns. And the president was frustrated that he could not take care of the people's business because of Democrats and the fake news media nipping at his heels with a false claim of colluding with Russia in the 2016 election. Trump had every right to fight back against the vicious hate from Democrats. The fake news media still reports only parts of the Mueller report. For instance, they point out that when the president was told of the Mueller investigation, he said his presidency would be destroyed. What they don't tell you is what Trump added to that statement. He pointed out that these special counsel witch hunts in the past tied a president's hands and caused them to spend all of their time defending against the lies. Trump was concerned about what this would do to the country. The mainstream media takes Trump's statement out of context on purpose to help Democrats keep the lies alive. Meanwhile, Democrats continue to want to focus on beating a dead horse. It's now time for the investigation to turn to those in the Obama administration who concocted this collusion lie in the first place, and those in the media who had no evidence of collusion but continued the lie. Remember, Peter Strzok, while in the FBI, sent out a message to his FBI lover, Lisa Page, alerting her that, quote, "the White House is running this," end quote. It's time to get former Attorneys General Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, Chief Obama Counsel Jarrett, and Obama himself under oath and investigation. There is a mountain of evidence that they colluded to stop the Trump presidency and to destroy him after he was duly elected. James Clapper and James Baker must be included, along with certain members of the press who kept this Trump-Russia collusion lie before the public while actively hiding the truth about collusion by the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, the DNC, the FBI, and the Justice Department. We must now demand that Adam Schiff and other Democrats either produce that mountain of evidence that they claim to have concerning collusion between Russia and the Trump administration. Attorney General Barr did what he should have done, and that is come down forcefully against this monstrous Democratic lie against the president. It is not being a puppet to point out the obvious truth that because of the collusion among Democrats, this president has had to keep operating under constant fire. It's a miracle that Trump has been able to get anything done, much less give us the strongest economy in decades, force foreign governments to agree to fair trade policies, put North Korea on notice and show the will to back it up, and to take the strongest stand against Russian interference of any president before him. As we watch the days ahead, we should be prepared for Democrats and the fake news media, who were caught lying to the American people, to produce more lies and distortion. There is less moral character in Democratic elites than atheists in church. We will have other presidents after Donald Trump, and we have to move swiftly to prevent any future president, Republican or Democrat, from being besieged with lies and fake protests and witch hunt investigations. We must never again allow the FBI and Justice Department to be used against political opponents. If we do not act forcefully now to get to the truth about how the government was used against opponents, this republic cannot long endure. Changing subjects, there are fewer and fewer sources for news in America that is not biased by liberal networks, cable channels, and so-called journalists themselves. Still, we as free Americans must not give up. It is important to keep up with what's happening in and to our country. And that's why I continue to put forth my weekly commentaries. I am not beholden to any political party nor any politicians. What I report to you is highly researched and absent personal bias. In the unlikely event that something I report to you is found to be incorrect, you can count on me to be the first to set the record straight. After more than 50 years of my commentaries, that has been necessary less than the fingers on one hand. It's also important for me to let you know that I received no compensation from anyone, no individual, no group. At this stage of my life, my only purpose is to speak to truth and justice. Having said that, sanctuary cities and refugees have been in the news a lot lately. President Trump floated the idea of relocating these refugees to cities and states that have set up sanctuaries for these illegal aliens, and who refuse to cooperate with the federal government on getting control of our borders. For years, liberal Democratic politicians in certain cities and states have called for unlimited immigration. The call for a completely open border rings loudly from the left. But when the president suggested that these refugees be sent to live in sanctuary cities and states, these same liberal Democrats called such a move immoral and unjust. In other words, let them all come in, but don't send them to our affluent neighborhoods. How typically hypocritical is that? After all, are these refugees not safer in cities and states that promise to protect them? But where does the concept of sanctuary cities come from? What was the original intent? Not surprisingly, its original intent was nothing like we see today. Maybe what will surprise you is that it started way back in the time of Moses, and it was started by God. Cities of refuge were required for God's people. So what were they really for? The answer is found in the Bible's book of Numbers. There we see the beginnings of what is called sanctuary cities. Joshua was named by God to replace Moses as the leader of his people. The Lord told them to set up cities of refugees, as we read in Numbers 35. Here's the big takeaway as far as why they were set up. Quote, "They will be places of refuge from the avenger, so that a person accused of murder may not die before he stands trial before the assembly," unquote. In case it wasn't clear with just the word murder in that verse, this was all about someone accused of murder, not some lesser crime, murder. This is about justice. In the legal sense, judgment refers to the process of defending the righteous and condemning the guilty. So the idea of sanctuary cities is not new. On the contrary, it dates to the time of Moses and bears no correlation to the meaning it's given today by liberals. It is ironic that liberal Democrats called the president's proposal dumping refugees. That's exactly what their hero, Barack Hussein Obama, did. He dumped the largest group of Muslim refugees coming from the Middle East into areas that did not request them and were not even told they were coming. These potential jihadists, who were unscreened and unvetted, were dumped into some 190 cities. One of those dumping grounds was in Minneapolis, where Obama created an area that is now called Little Mogadishu. And he stocked it with enough of these so-called refugees from to elect a radical Muslim woman named Ilhan Omar to Congress. Omar is notoriously anti-Semitic and has been decidedly anti-American in her rash statements. Another dumping ground for potential jihadists was in Michigan, where a radical Muslim woman named Rashid Tlaib was elected to Congress with their votes. Tlaib is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, and she has ties to CARE, and through them, ties to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. History tells us that the House and the Senate have been shirking their duties under the Refugee Act of 1980 for more than 20 years. The Refugee Act of 1980 intended to provide Congress with a meaningful role in the process of determining refugee admissions. Former Representative Elizabeth Holtzman, then chair of the House Subcommittee on Immigration, Refugees and International Law, said this, quote, "Importantly, for the first time, the bill requires that Congress be consulted before refugees are admitted and spells out in detail the elements of that consultation," unquote. In the past several years, the refugee consultation process has devolved into a single meeting between the executive branch and the House and Senate Judiciary Committees near the end of each fiscal year, the very type of process that the 1980 Act expressly rejected. One should not be surprised to find that the designated terror group, Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, behind trying to move some of these potential jihadists into areas like St. Louis and other cities where Muslim refugees seek enough refugees there to establish a foothold in our elections. The Obama administration knew from the get-go that this was going to happen. It openly ignored immigration laws for those crossing our southern border and Muslims. This taking in of Muslim refugees by the United States, rather than lands like Saudi Arabia, who in my opinion was more responsible for 9/11 than Afghanistan or Iraq, was treason against the United States and every single elected representative. Along with Obama and his minions, all should be held accountable. The outcry today about Trump dumping refugees is laughable. The president has simply acknowledged that the majority of people in the United States want our borders to be secured and the flow of potential jihadists into our country stopped until every last one can be properly vetted and verified. What is the reason for proclaiming yourself a sanctuary city or state unless it's to welcome those seeking sanctuary? Why then the outcry when the president calls your bluff and suggests escorting these refugees into your welcoming arms? He isn't dumping them as Barack Hussein Obama did during his administration with the aim of creating pockets of voters who would not assimilate into American culture, and who are determined to undermine our country by electing radicals like Ilhan Omar, who has said that she wants to make Americans uncomfortable. Do you want to be uncomfortable? We literally reward refugees by offering them benefits and assistance once they're here, legally or illegally. As Selway Duke said in The New American, illegal aliens get more welfare benefits than citizens. Whether or not illegal aliens are doing jobs that Americans won't do, they're certainly getting benefits Americans don't get. This was the finding of a Center for Immigration, or CIS, report stating that a whopping 70% of illegal immigrant households with children receive handouts via a government program. The rate for immigrant households with children overall, both legal and illegal, is about 57% versus only 39% for native households. This puts the lie to open border advocates' claim that immigration is a net plus for our country. While this might have been true prior to the nanny state's rise, when immigrants had to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, today's statist Democrats' entitlement culture has changed that equation. As the waving of foreign flags in American street protests prove, many today come here not to assimilate, but because America, land of the free, has come to mean free stuff for non-Americans. And it isn't that immigrants are more likely to be on the dole. They also outstrip Americans in terms of raw numbers. According to Judicial Watch, the majority of households across the country benefiting from publicly funded welfare programs are headed by immigrants, both legal and illegal. None of that is surprising. The fact that 85% of our immigrants now hail from the Third World and Asia, a situation created by Ted Kennedy's Immigration Reform Act of 1965, ensures that our new arrivals are generally both poor and poorly uneducated. It is an immigration system that has made us the flop house and soup kitchen of the world. But while this diversity may be strengthening us into bankruptcy, there are some Americans who benefit from it. For instance, businesses that want cheap labor benefit. The vast majority, some 95% of immigrant households with children, had at least one worker. But their low education levels means that more than half of those working immigrant households with children still got help from the welfare system. Translation: the taxpayers, you and me, are subsidizing these businesses' cheap labor. If immigrants could not receive handouts, the United States would be far less appealing, and they would be less likely to migrate here. Not all of them, but many. This would put pressure on businesses to offer higher wages, which in turn would increase the chances that American citizens would accept the jobs currently held by immigrants. Remember, there are no jobs that Americans won't do. Only wages Americans will not work for. The second group that benefits from our suicidal immigration policies are Democratic statist politicians. Importing the impoverished is a recipe for growing their voting bloc, and the proof is in the pudding. The demographic, that Third World and Asian immigrants represent supports Democratic statist politicians by a wide margin, and this fact is not lost on leftists. As Simon Rosenberg of the New Democrat Network, a Democratic-aligned think tank, said, quote, "America is in the midst of a profound demographic change. Each election now brings a different electorate than the one just passed," end quote. Rosenberg makes the point that immigration and birth rate trends are causing the United States minority population, a core Republican constituency, to shrink percentage-wise. In other words, Democrats support immigration so they can import voters. And they're doing a good job of it, too. The most recent census shows the rate of this demographic shift has been faster than anyone expected. The non-Hispanic white population has dropped from 69.1% in 2000 to less than 60% today. The numbers of people identifying themselves as Hispanics in states like Utah, Idaho, and Nebraska and New Hampshire all increased by more than 50%. Such rises help the Democratic Party. This is why, without changing our archaic immigration system, a ballot box remedy for the problems of a porous border, handouts for illegals, and creeping socialism will be impossible. Like the ocean, each new wave of immigrants crossing our borders is decidedly blue. Thus, unless we want our future to be determined by interlopers who did not build this country, something is going to have to change. Democrats have perfected the art of exploiting human tragedy to further their cause. Their motto is, "The end justifies the means." Democrats want open borders for one reason: power. More people necessitate the need for more government. We've been in an illegal immigrant crisis for decades. This didn't just happen. With tens of millions of people entering the country illegally. And who are illegal immigrants? Of necessity, they are typically people who have very little. Most can't speak English, don't particularly want to, and they don't have jobs or support systems ready for them here. So, they become wards of the state. Democrats bribe immigrants with promises of free health care, education, food stamps, etc., the same way they do everyone else. They create dependents who will be with them for life. A new study shows that 63% of non-citizens are on some kind of welfare program. 70% of non-citizens who have been in our country for longer than 10 years are still on a welfare program. The issue then soon becomes, as Margaret Thatcher put it, you eventually run out of other people's money, at which point the existing system collapses. And what better way to collapse the existing system and create the need for a massive expansion of the federal government than to import millions of illegal aliens into the country? And what better way to control the masses than to be the sole arbiter and source of their well-being? Is there any more ultimate leverage point than to coerce people to do whatever you want just so they can eat? It's clear, then, why Democrats want an open border. They see an open border as a means to an end, a pathway to gain the power they have always dreamed of. The only way to stop them from achieving their goal is to back the few politicians we have left who truly stand up for a secure border. We need a wall on our southern border. We desperately need a wall on our southern border. It might not cure the entire problem, but it would surely help. Democrats voted for such a wall. But when Donald Trump became president, their hate for him overrode their care for the country. We have to stand up to those who place a political party above the country's security. The very future of our country is at stake. I want to thank you again for listening to my commentary this week. I try to get them out every Sunday, and they go out all across the country, on radio, on the internet. We have a large group of people who receive my commentaries in their email. If you'd like to make sure that you get my commentary each week, send me your email address, and I'll put you on our growing list of people who receive it in their email. It'll show up every Sunday. Just send your email address to me at comments@tomjoyner.net. That's comments@tomjoyner.net. I'll be back to continue waging the fight next week, same time, same station.